You are now listening to the OrthoBullets podcast.
This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of adult dysplasia of the hip from the recon section on orthobullets.com. Hip dysplasia is a disorder of abnormal development or dislocation of the hip secondary to capsular laxity and mechanical factors. Adult and adolescent dysplasia can come in two forms: dysplasia that was previously treated or dysplasia that was not treated. And if left untreated, it can progress to early arthritis. With respect to pathoanatomy, acetabular retroversion is the most common factor. As far as epidemiology, dysplasia is attributable to 1/3 of all cases of hip osteoarthritis. With respect to classification of adult dysplasia of the hip, the two to know are the Crow classification and the Hardophilakidis classification. The Crow classification is divided into 4 grades and is based on proximal displacement and femoral head subluxation. Grade 1 has less than 10% vertical height of the pelvis with respect to proximal displacement, and with respect to femoral head subluxation, proximal migration of the head-neck junction from the inter-teardrop line is less than 50% of the femoral head vertical diameter. Grade 2 has 10 to 15% vertical height of the pelvis with respect to the proximal displacement, and with respect to the femoral head subluxation, proximal migration of the head-neck junction from the inter-teardrop line is 50 to 75% of the femoral head vertical diameter. Grade 3 has 15 to 20% vertical height of the pelvis with respect to the proximal displacement, and with respect to the femoral head subluxation, proximal migration of the head-neck junction from the inter-teardrop line is 75 to 100% of the femoral head vertical diameter. And finally, grade 4 has greater than 20% vertical height of the pelvis with respect to the proximal displacement, and with respect to the femoral head subluxation, proximal migration of the head-neck junction from the inter-teardrop line is greater than 100% of the femoral head vertical diameter. The Hardophilakidis classification has 3 types. Type A is the dysplasia type and is characterized by the femoral head within the acetabulum despite some subluxation. However, there will be some segmental deficiency of the superior wall and inadequate true acetabulum depth in this type. Type B is the low dislocation type and is characterized by the femoral head creating a false acetabulum superior to the true acetabulum. There is complete absence of the superior wall and inadequate depth of the true acetabulum. Finally, type C is the high dislocation type and is characterized by a femoral head that is completely uncovered by the true acetabulum and has migrated superiorly and posteriorly. There is complete deficiency of the acetabulum and excessive antiversion of the true acetabulum. With respect to presentation of patients with adult dysplasia of the hip, symptoms can include hip or groin pain, especially in flexion activities, and symptoms often have an insidious onset. Physical exam will have increased internal rotation before arthritis sets in due to increased femoral antiversion. Exam may also reveal decreased internal rotation, which may represent osteoarthritis. There may also be increased external rotation with ambulation, a positive anterior impingement test that is pain with passive flexion, internal rotation, and adduction, and patients may have instability with extension, abduction, and external rotation. As far as imaging, recommended views on radiographs include AP and laterals of the hip. Findings may include decreased femoral head sphericity, a crossover sign, which results from increased retroversion, acetabular protrusio, which is defined as a decreased lateral center edge angle of less than 20 degrees. This is measured as the angle between a vertical line plus the line from the femoral head to the lateral acetabulum. You will assess this on AP view, and remember that a normal lateral center edge angle is 25 to 40 degrees. Other findings may include an increased tonus angle of greater than 10 degrees, and this is measured as an angle between a horizontal line plus the line along the superior acetabulum, and this measures the inclination of the weight-bearing zone. Like the lateral center edge angle, you will assess the tonus angle on AP view, and remember that a normal tonus angle is 0 to 10 degrees. Other findings of adult dysplasia of the hip on radiographs include a decreased head-neck offset ratio, and this is the distance between the line parallel to the femoral neck through the anterior femoral neck plus the anterior femoral head divided by the diameter of the femoral head. The head-neck offset ratio is assessed on the lateral view, and a normal head-neck offset ratio is greater than 0.15. Other findings can include coxa valga, or an increased femoral neck shaft angle, which is the angle created by the anatomic axis of the femur and the femoral neck. Finally, you may also find a decreased vertical center anterior margin angle, otherwise known as an anterior center edge angle, and this is obtained on a false profile radiograph and is the angle between the vertical line through the center of the femoral head to the lateral acetabulum. The anterior center edge angle is essentially an assessment of anterior undercoverage. CT scan can be useful in assessing structural abnormalities of the femoral head and neck. Moving on to treatment, non-operative management in the form of supportive measures is indicated as the first line of treatment. Operative options can include periacetabular osteotomy plus or minus a femoral osteotomy, salvage pelvic osteotomy like a Chiari or shelf osteotomy, hip resurfacing, or a total hip arthroplasty, and we'll go into the indications of each of these options now. A periacetabular osteotomy, plus or minus a femoral osteotomy, is indicated for symptomatic dysplasia in an adolescent or adult with a concentrically reduced hip and a congruous joint with good joint space. Advantages of this option is that it provides hyaline cartilage coverage, the posterior column remains intact, and patients can weight bear after the procedure. It also preserves external rotators and delays the need for arthroplasty. A salvage pelvic osteotomy like a Chiari or shelf osteotomy is indicated for an unreduced hip and is recommended for patients with inadequate femoral head coverage and an incongruous joint. Therefore, this option is considered a salvage procedure. Hip resurfacing is indicated for Crow type 1 or type 2 disease. Total hip arthroplasty is indicated for the treatment of last resort for those patients with severe arthritis. It's preferred treatment for older patients, defined as greater than age 50, and those with advanced structural changes. Remember that in a patient with bilateral hip dysplasia, there are significant technical challenges that need to be addressed to ensure a successful total hip arthroplasty. Now, let's talk about some of these surgical techniques in a bit more detail. A periacetabular osteotomy, like a Gans or Bernese osteotomy, involves multiple osteotomies in the pubis, ilium, and ischium near the acetabulum. This allows improved three-dimensional correction of the acetabulum configuration. It is technically the most challenging osteotomy. The complication rate is as high as 15% even in experienced hands. Hip arthroplasty performed after periacetabular osteotomy may lead to increased incidence of a retroverted acetabular cup. Moving on to a shelf osteotomy, the goal of this procedure is to increase the weight-bearing surface by placing an extra-articular buttress of bone over the subluxed femoral head. And remember, with this procedure, you will cover the femoral head with fibrocartilage, not articular cartilage. As far as the technique, you will add bone to the lateral aspect of the acetabulum, and it depends on metaplastic bone, aka fibrocartilage, for successful results. Moving on to a Chiari osteotomy, the technique here is to make a cut above the acetabulum to the sciatic notch and shift the ilium lateral beyond the edge of the acetabulum. It also depends on metaplastic bone, aka fibrocartilage, for successful results. Finally, total hip replacement for adult dysplasia of the hip. As far as the technique, you may need a trochanteric osteotomy to improve visualization in Crow type 3 or 4 patients. In a patient with bilateral hip dysplasia, there are significant technical challenges that need to be addressed to ensure a successful total hip arthroplasty. The acetabular cup is ideally placed where the center of the true acetabulum would be. Restoring the center of the hip may cause significant lengthening and require femoral shortening. A high hip center can be used when there is inadequate bone stock in the acetabulum to achieve adequate host bone coverage. A modular femoral implant may be used for a dysplastic hip with significant rotational deformity. And finally, you can use an uncemented cup if there is less than 30% uncoverage. Insufficient coverage, which is defined as less than 60 to 70%, can lead to a lack of initial stability and early failure. If the preoperative template suggests extreme superolateral bone loss, the surgeon must then consider alternative methods of achieving satisfactory fixation, including downsizing the acetabular component size, medializing or elevating the hip center, or use of trabecular metal augments or cement augmentation for better coverage. Finally, let's talk about some complications. In sciatic nerve palsies, there is a 10 times increased incidence of sciatic nerve palsy in adult hip dysplasia patients at roughly 5 to 15% of patients. lengthening of greater than 4 centimeters can lead to sciatic nerve palsy that will present clinically as a foot drop. Other complications include hip dislocation, and there is an increased risk of hip dislocation after arthroplasty for hip dysplasia patients at roughly 5 to 10% of patients. Other complications to always keep in mind for hip arthroplasty in adult hip dysplasia patients, or any hip arthroplasty patient for that matter, are periprosthetic femur fractures and infection. That's all for this review about adult dysplasia of the hip. Hopefully that was helpful. Look out for questions related to this topic on this weekend's question session, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that review. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.